Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to Whoa! Potluck. Potluck.
And hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu. We're here to talk about our April book club pick, Bangkok Wakes to Rain by Pachaya Sudbanthan.
Yeah, as always, this is your spoiler warning. We're going to be talking all about this book. So if you haven't read the book yet and you care about that sort of thing, it's time to stop listening, go read the book, and then come back and join us.
Happy APAM, Marvin.
It is May, isn't it?
It is.
Holy crap.
It's our month.
It's our month. That's why there's like events every single night.
Yeah, and then it will be our month again in August because Asian August.
It's not Asian August this year, though. It's more Asian summer.
We can reclaim it.
A lot of films coming out in May, too. Mm.
I am excited for the Detective Pikachu film that is coming out very soon.
At first, I was like, this looks bad. But then I saw Sonic. I was like, no, it looks good.
No, it looks good.
It looks fine. It's fine. Yeah.
And you just got back from New York.
I did. I was in New York for Tribeca. Saw a couple films. And I'm back in town because tonight's the start of the Los Angeles Asian Pacific Film Festival put on by our friends at Visual Communications. And their offices are where our podcast studio is located. So if you hear sounds of things being moved around and people talking in the background, it's because they're busy with gearing up for their opening night.
We are grateful that we have this space.
But with that, let's get into the book. Rira,
right.
Let's start us off.
All right. As always, we start with the book jacket. A missionary doctor pines for his native New England, even as he succumbs to the vibrant chaos of 19th century Siam. A post-World War II society woman marries, mothers, and holds court, little suspecting her solitary fate. A jazz pianist in the age of rock, haunted by his own ghosts, is summoned to appease the house's resident spirits. In the present, a young woman tries to outpace the long shadow of her political past, and in a new Krungthep, yet to come, savvy teenagers row tourists past landmarks of the drowned old city they themselves do not remember. Time collapses as these lives collide and converge, linked by the forces voraciously making and remaking the amphibious, ever-morphing capital itself. And that is Bangkok Wakes to Rain.
Yeah. So where should we start with this one? Because I feel like this book, more than any other book we've read, I don't know. There's so many ways we can start.
Yes. Right? Yeah, that's the thing. This book is very non-linear. Like, you can literally just start on a chapter, I feel like. Like, open a random chapter in the book, and that can be the beginning. Because everything is so interchangeable. You have characters who, you know, are briefly introduced, and then like decades later they come back and they have like significance.
Do you feel about this type of story?
For me, I don't know. Like, my feelings are kind of torn, like half and half, because I really don't like. I feel like in my experience, I've never really had a good experience with nonlinear stories, simply because I'm very type A, and I'm like, give me the things in a linear way. But I think Pachaya did a really good job interweaving stories. This book, there's a lot of water in it.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that his structure would be so fluid and time goes back and forth, and your jumping characters, and in the end they kind of gather into one large body. So it really did match the themes of the book.
Yeah, it's very I had an analogy in my head, but I totally forgot it.
Oh, but my analogy.
it trumps yours. Well, yeah, I mean, I feel like while I was reading it, because his prose is so like, would Lush be it right? We're like descriptive, very like tactile.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And, you know, you find yourself being invested in the story that he's telling, only to find that the next chapter is about a different person. And you don't get used to it because, like, you know, you want to know what happens to these characters next, but you're always looking forward to when they come back around.
Yeah.
And like, water is a big theme in this book, either through rain or oceans or swimming pools. And it makes sense because Bangkok is a very wet place.
Yes.
Like, it's 100% humidity every single day.
Well, I've never been, but I'm guessing that it's a lot of rain, a lot of humidity.
I mean, it's a Southeast Asian country, so they go through monsoon seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I have family out there, so they always tell me about, like, just seeing the floods roll in.
So what did you think about the opening of the chapter, like opening of the book? Because for me, it was really kind of ambiguous, because I was just like, who is this character? It's the character is unnamed. You don't really know what time period it is. So
I think it was meant to be.
And yeah, it was totally meant to be.
I spent the entire book trying to figure out who it was. I mean, they reveal it later.
Yeah.
But, right. And memory plays a big role. Like, memory is a huge thing about this story too, right? And what memory means and why it's important.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And like the preservation of those memories. And in a way, the memories that the book like talks about is more than just human memories. It's the memories of place, memories of culture and heritage. And throughout the story, customs change, traditions change, but a lot of things stay the same. And a lot of, Bangkok or Krung Thep is characterized as a place that's actually pretty resistant to change.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I thought the juxtaposition between like technology in Bangkok mixed in with like the street hawkers and just like you have these skyscrapers, but you also have monks asking for alms. And I was just like, wow, like that, isn't that like pretty much the story of any Asian country? Cause it's like you're fighting against technology while trying to hold on to customs and rituals. And as time goes by, you kind of question which customs, which traditions actually do matter, because as time goes on, you kind of think, you're just like, oh, this is kind of questionable.
I mean, there's that, right? When it comes to things like health and like the development of health tech, if you can call it that, is a big through line throughout the story, starting from the storyline of Phineas, the missionary doctor.
Yeah.
All the way to June.
Yeah.
Yeah, June, the daughter of Mai's plastic surgeon.
Yes.
Right, who is a future nurse or a future home doctor, I guess.
Yeah, a future home doctor. I thought that was interesting because correct me if I'm wrong, but the disease that plagues...
it's cholera.
Cholera. Mm-hmm. So it's like it comes back in like the future. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Just like measles is coming back today.
Oh my, I don't want to think about that. Like, oh, God. Anyway, I guess, like, for me, since we brought up Phineas, I'm going to just talk about Phineas.
And we can start from the beginning, which is Phineas.
I guess so, Phineas. So
chronologically speaking.
I thought it was really funny because you think about like fish out of water movies where like with the white guy going to like an Asian country and it's just like, oh, these savages, I need to like correct their ways, or their medicine is so primitive, like I'm going to educate them.
Yeah.
But And it's like such a white male savior type of view.
Yeah.
But like Phineas's story is not that. It's kind of framed in the beginning. Like you're just like, okay, is he going to like cure the village because he's a doctor? But in the end, he just gets sick. And he just, like he's just like, okay, this is kind of like an inverse of white male savior.
Kind of. But it's also like white male goes to Asian country, finds his quote-unquote real home,
real forever home.
You know, I mean, the whole first chapter, which is like, I think was the second or third chapter of the book.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, because like the first chapter, like I said, the opening with the ambiguous character who's walking through the house.
Yeah, I think the second chapter is the first chapter with Phineas.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah, that would make sense.
That whole time was like, this guy, this guy, you know, because you have like all the different tropes too, right? You have the super judgy newcomer who thinks everything is like
terrible
and savage. He just wants to go home because it's the plot of Book of Mormon. Have you ever seen that?
No, I haven't.
It's basically that. Okay. That's his story. And you have the guy who's gone native, right?
Oh, yeah.
The white guy who embraces the culture.
The engineer.
The printer.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And then you have like the missionaries who like want to save everybody.
Yeah.
They're here on mission.
And this is your first glimpse into how Bangkok is really resistant to change.
Yeah. I mean, Phineas's story, I guess we can stay on Phineas, is that he ends up, he wants to transfer home, but he ends up getting sick. And as he gets sick, he like develops, how does he develop a love for the country?
Like, well, like what happens is that he gets sick and like, I don't know if it's the witch doctor was dead, but like, one of like the Thai villagers like takes care of him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, this is not like British medicine. This is some like Thai concoction that hasn't been tested with science, but he gets better. And he's like, okay, well, clearly, not everything is terrible. And
there's something here.
And I think that's like his first hint at like him realizing that he's been too harsh on his judgment, and there are like different ways to different ways that can cure a disease, I guess. And as like a doctor, I think that is kind of like a life-changing moment for him. I'm not sure, but
I mean, I think his story is also, it's funny because it's the same tension you have in the other stories from the other eras, where that one confrontation he has with the man who falls off the swing, right, where he wants to like use his knowledge of modern physiology to like treat him and make sure he's like carried in a way that won't kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And then in conflict with the witch doctor who wants to take him to go pray to the gods or something. And it's like, when it comes to that, like, you end up sympathizing with this colonizer guy, right?
One thing I did like about this book is just the number of, like, obviously we're jumping heads in the book, but you also get, like, different, I guess, like, view lenses, because you have, like, the white man coming to like a foreign country and hating it.
Yeah.
And then you have someone like Sammy, who, you know, was born in Thailand, kind of grew up during his childhood, moved to London, was raised there, kind of traveled around the world, and then comes back to Thailand. So you have someone who is returning to the motherland.
Well, he comes back and then he leaves again.
And then you have like Nock, who is, you know, living in Japan, and like you have all of these viewpoints. It's kind of like a prism, and and like you kind of get a different Bangkok and different Thailand from each viewpoint.
Yeah, I mean, we come back to place, right? And all the characters of this story is linked by their connection to place, and not just Bangkok, the city, but like a specific like block and building.
Yeah, the house.
The house, right? And when I was reading those parts, I was thinking about just diaspora, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not just the Thai diaspora, but like the Chinese diaspora, the Korean diaspora, and the way we, like, even if we leave our culture and put down roots somewhere else. Like, there's the memory of the culture that remains and is important. And I think that was the thing with Nock's story. Nock, who's the sister of Ni, who moves away to immigrate to Japan and opens a Thai restaurant and becomes the center of the Thai student community there.
Yeah.
Because she's giving them a taste of home. You have Sammy, who is, I guess, your typical, like, 1.5 generation, right? Like, Bangkok born, foreign educated.
Yeah, I would say so.
Right. And what him and Nock both have in common is their desire to get away from, like, responsibilities or, like, their ties to their cultural, like, expectations.
Yeah.
Right. But still remaining Thai.
Yeah.
No matter where they are.
It's like with Sammy, as much as I hated Sammy.
That guy was the worst.
He, I could really relate with his like point of view, because he comes back to Bangkok and he says multiple times in his inner monologue that he feels like a tourist because like the city has changed so much.
Yeah.
But then he'll like get to a certain part of Bangkok where he recognizes parts of his childhood and he's like, oh, actually, no, it didn't change. Like, as much as I thought it would. And I think that is, like, such a relatable thing when it comes to, like, diaspora. Because you go back to the motherland and you're like, I don't recognize anything. But then you find, like, a little piece of home. And you're like, okay, the feeling of not belonging, it constantly goes back and forth in a seesaw with like, okay, yeah, I guess I am Thai. At the end of the day.
Yeah, I think Sammy was probably the third or fourth chapter, the one right after the Phineas one, when he first gets introduced to him, when he goes back to England, right?
Yeah, because his dad has a stroke.
And he kind of has that same experience going back to England, because he left England too, to like run away.
Because his dad pretty much had an affair with like another woman, a white woman, and you know, he just left because he didn't feel like he quite belonged there. Yeah. Well, you kind of get a sense from that restlessness in Sammy. Like, he doesn't feel like he belongs anywhere, so he's constantly running and constantly being with other women and not taking responsibility.
Yeah.
Like, come on, dude. Like, use a condom. Like, how hard is that?
Yeah, you know, he had a tough childhood.
I know.
But then he, like, grew up rich. I mean, whatever. Sammy as a character was not a good dude.
But he made for an interesting character.
Yeah.
I really like that conversation between him and his dad. When his dad asks him about, it's like, do you know Bangkok's, like, full name?
Yeah.
And Sammy's like, of course I do. And he starts reciting it, but then he forgets midway. And his dad says, yeah, I forgot too. And it's just like, wow, like, even though you try to retain as much culture as possible, of course, some things are going to be lost.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, it's a really sad scene. Also, like, in that conversation, Sammy's father brings up the October Massacre. And and like, Sammy's just like, I don't know, I don't keep up with the news, but we're kind of brought back into Thailand, and we see through
it was Ni and
her college sweetheart Siripong. I think that's how you pronounce his name.
Siripong. Yeah.
I really liked Ni and Nock's stories the most. I think those two storylines were the anchors in this book.
Yeah, I was really sad in, I think it was part two chapter where they have their falling out.
Yeah, that was really, like,
I wanted to, like, skip ahead. Do they make up?
Is this one of those relationships where, like, one of them dies and it's like, oh no, regrets for life?
Yeah.
But it was really nice that they did make up in the end. It sounded like they made up in the end.
And I kind of like that they didn't zoom in on that scene.
Yeah.
They just said it's just something that happened, because you get older, you get perspective.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, that's another theme of the of the story is like, as you progress through the parts, like the chapters, like all the characters start gaining perspective because they're older in their individual life points, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
I like how Pig became a like sassy granny when she was like
sassy granny.
The worst as a teenager.
You really see growth, and you really see how not only the city changed, but how like people's perspectives on the city changed and how they've adapted. And I do want to keep talking more about Nee and Nock because I feel like there's so much going on in their storyline. I was actually really surprised that Siripong died and then it just like switched over to Nee. And then like you just kind of kept going with Nee. And I was like, oh, okay. Like...
Like, I mean, that's the thing with this book, right? Characters appear for like half a chapter sometimes. And like, there's that one chapter, I think it was the beginning of part two, I want to say, where like they change perspective like five times in that one chapter, right? It starts with the wolves and it goes to the guy who's like guarding the house in the guardhouse. And it goes like his son, I guess, or his nephew, who's one of the construction workers. And then goes into the office manager.
Oh, yeah, yeah, tenants, you're right. I do remember this chapter.
And in that one chapter, it spans maybe like a couple years in itself. And like when I was reading through that chapter, I was like, it was taking me for a ride.
Yeah. Because like in a movie, it's just like you just see a montage.
Yeah.
And with a book, that does not work. So you have to put more effort into figuring out when things change and transitions and whatnot. But I think it was pretty much seamless.
It was pretty seamless, but it was just like, it goes from the scene where the kid does drugs and climbs up a tower, right? To like the next scene. It doesn't say it passes, but it says that like an accident happened.
Yeah, it was
people thought this building was haunted.
It's when this is where you kind of get crossing threads here, but mm-hmm. it's Sammy's old house, like the house that he grew up in.
Yeah.
And then his mom is like, well, I'm going to sell this house so they can build a condo out of it. And that's where like the guy falls to his death because he's doing construction on it.
Right. And then.
And then, like, tenants are like, this is not a nice place to live because there's a death here.
Yeah.
And it's, like, bad luck and a lot of superstition.
Well, then Nee works at that place, teaches swimming to kids.
Yeah, she becomes a receptionist there.
And even, because for the longest time, I was like, okay, how does Phineas relate to this whole, like, through line? Mm-hmm. And in the end, you realize that's his house. That's the mission. The colonial house was the mission that he worked at and lived in and started his trading company in, which passed on to his business partner's children.
Yeah. And you kind of get like the house in this book is pretty much like a character of its own because in part four. Wow, part four.
Right.
It just steered really hard to sci-fi, and I loved it. I felt like part four is the reason why I really, like it's the main reason why I like the book.
Like, he went for it.
Yeah. I know that a lot of people on Goodreads was, like, not okay with that, because they're like, why? Like, don't add sci-fi randomly. And I'm like, no, I think it's really organic.
Yeah.
I think he did it really naturally, and I think it was really interesting. But there's a scene where I think it's kind of like this virtual chamber, I guess, where Mai and Pig are talking.
Yeah.
And Mai is just like, oh, let me show you something. And then she shows like footage of the house, and you see like a shadow falling for a brief second.
Yeah.
And like Pig asks her, whose memory is this? And she's like, it's the house. The house remembers remembers events. And and it's just like, oh yeah, like a place can remember things. And I thought that was like really poignant.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like memories are distinctly tied to place. You might not remember when, but you know where things happened.
Yeah.
Right? Like places, things, they trigger memories. And that was another recurring theme, was people revisiting places they've been. Right? Sammy did it when he was in England and also back in Thailand. June tried to do it when she was on that boat tour thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was also fascinated by like his speculative writing about the future of transhumanism.
Yeah. I thought it was really interesting when it went into like climate change stuff. Yeah. And I mean, throughout this book, there are calamities. Like you have the cholera in the beginning of the book, yeah, that starts to form. And then you have
all the coups.
You have all the coups. You have the October massacre. And then you have like the flooding. So it's just like throughout all of these calamities, people have made it through. And I think it's really like a story about like no matter how bad things get, humans find a way to like survive.
And humans also find a way to create classism.
Yes, that too.
And maybe it's like we're doomed to repeat the same things, because as long as there are scarce resources and people with different access to those resources. I mean, that was one of the most fascinating things about that one chapter where it's switching all these perspectives, is you see the perspectives of everyone from animals to workers all the way to like the rich, like landowners, yeah, right? And they all exist in this same place, but they all have massively different perspectives and values.
We were talking about like remembrance and like resilience. And I just wanted to share a quote in the book that I really, really liked. And it's about the October massacre of the 1970s. "Those October dates swallowed everyone who'd been there in history's giant unlit belly, and that history into silence. The forgotten return again and again as new names and faces, and again the city makes new ghosts."
Yeah. I mean, that event, it followed me everywhere, right? Like, that was her trauma.
Yeah. And, like, I did, like, brief research on it because I've never heard of the October massacre because, obviously, yeah, I'm not Thai, and it's, like, really hard to, like...
I knew about the coups. I knew there was, like, a coup, like, every few years someone would, like, take power and put someone else in charge.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them were bloodless, but there were some bloody ones.
Yeah. From what I have gleaned from just, like, looking up random articles after I finished this book, it's an event that the Thai government hasn't really addressed officially. And, you know, it's kind of a thing that they keep trying to bury. And it's just like, yeah, you're not going to be able to bury that shit.
I don't know, when you control the means of education.
I know, but the thing is, like, you have survivors, and yeah, like, even if that event is completely erased, I feel like that trauma, like that impact it had on Thai history,
yeah,
is not going anywhere. So it is kind of like a ghost that lingers amongst like the Thai people.
Yeah.
And it just reminded me that like revolutions happen with young people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like every time I hear about like protests in not just like Asia, but here in America, it's always started by like young students.
And it's always students, right?
Because that's when... always students, the most powerless people, yeah. The most powerless people in the social hierarchy, and also the people who can benefit the most from change.
Yeah.
I mean, history repeats itself. Like, when there is injustice in society, you see figures that kind of repeat what what previous protesters did and kind of like add on to it.
I mean, even in this book,
yeah,
things repeat over and over again, you know, in terms of progress versus history, right? Well, a lot of the book is Bangkok kind of westernizing, right? Building mixed-use buildings, condominiums in the...
Yeah.
It's that need for progress, that need to be a player in the...
In the global stage.
While still longing to, like, hold on to everything that makes them Thai,
mm-hmm,
right? And that tension is throughout the book. Like, even... I mean, what did you think about Sammy's conclusion, where he ends up a proprietor of, like, a bread and breakfast and, like, what, Boston or something? Like,
I don't know. It's in New England.
Yeah.
I don't know, because for me, like, Sammy's, like, ending, quote unquote, I feel like it really wasn't an ending, because Sammy feels like he is constantly looking for a place where he can settle, but, like, it's not the right place for him.
Mm.
And I guess, like, for Sammy, it's just, like, where is home? Because he's constantly moving. And I guess, like, as a reader, I just kind of think that home is the Bangkok that he remembers in his brain, because it doesn't exist anymore. I mean, there are parts of it that are still left, but it's like,
I thought it was interesting that his story ends with him
getting beat up.
Well, not getting beat up, but like in adultery, you know?
Yeah, things repeat, you know, you make, we said it earlier in this episode, things repeat and people make the same mistakes over and over again.
And even though this time he decides to like,
take responsibility,
it's still like perpetuating that cycle. But it's one of the things I wrote down was like, something that this book is really interested in is seeing people as a sum total of their experiences. All the characters we see in part four at the end of their, you know, their stories, they're all changed because of everything that happened to them. Not in spite, but because of, right? Yeah. And even if some of them try to run away, they're still affected by that thing, those things that happened to them. It's like this, the later chapters with Pig's son, Woon, who, you know, you're first introduced to him while he was going through like a depressive episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like locking himself in his room. But you see him later as like
this kind of like researcher,
like an archaeologist. Yeah. And even though both him and his mom don't talk about that time, right? He talks about other people sometimes. Like that's part of his story, right?
I thought it was you get Pig's perspective, like her son is like locking himself up in his room and you don't know why. And you kind of see her as this like really, really good mom, you know, it's like, oh, she didn't do anything wrong. This just kind of happened. And she's just trying to get him out of his room without ruining his future for going into university and all that. And then you get Woon's perspective when he's older and you find out that Pig was actually not the greatest mother. Like she would get drunk and a lot of angry words would be tossed at him. And then that is like partially why he locked himself up. And I was like, oh, interesting. Did not know that. And she would forget that she said all of those terrible things or she got drunk. And I was like, oh, okay. Like we are touching back on the theme of, you know, you remember and you forget, but yeah, it still leaves an impact. And I thought that was like really, really interesting and a good way to like change perspectives.
I liked Woon's chapter, the one that's dedicated to his like perspective, because that was the one where you learn about like the transhuman like future that we're all going to live in, where I guess people can live forever in a virtual world.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's kind of like a like an MMORPG, kind of, you know, you like pick your avatar and you can be whatever you want to be.
I like how, and this goes back to Prachaya's writing style, like being really like almost tactile, where he goes in detail of what it feels like to enter that world, right? You have to drink that cocktail of like electrolytes or something.
Yeah, something like that.
And then it goes through a body scan and then like you get pulled in to wherever. And and I thought comparing that to the walk to the waterfall that they take with his mom and family the next day, right? Yeah. Where you still see pieces of the old world.
Yeah, yeah. Because they're there for like a holiday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, there was a line in one of the chapters when June, Mai's daughter, asks Pig about like the lantern festival, like where they like put lights on like a piece of paper and like float down the river. And she's like, oh, do you guys still do that? Because, you know, June is not living in Thailand. She's living in New York. And, like, Pig is just like, not so much anymore. I mean, people still do it, but the water is, like, gross now.
Yeah. What did you think about the Pig in My Story?
The Pig in My Story?
Yeah.
I really don't know, because I feel like they introduced me to all of the cool parts in the book that I liked, but I'm not sure if I actually like their characters. Mm.
Well, they're both very flawed.
Yes,
right?
Yes. Well, Mai goes from like this kind of like this tag-along character who is pretty much there to, you know, give Pig university notes, and she comes from like a middle class family, and even though she's like super smart, she's like,
yeah,
like there's only a few options for me. And then you kind of fast forward and you see that she is like the head of like this technology that is going to pretty much change the way people live in Thailand.
Yeah, when she first pulls out that drone, that was like
that bird drone.
Yeah, and it's like, okay. That's not what I was expecting from this book, but okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really weird, because you get future Bangkok, which is like kind of partly underwater. Mm-hmm. Like people still go, there are terrible floodings, and
yeah.
And you're just like, oh, that's really bad. Like, I wonder if like they're going to do something about that. And they don't. Just like any other like government, and people still go about their lives. They wear like freaking galoshes, and they're like, okay, life goes on.
They become the Krung Nok, and they're like fishermen people.
Yeah, yeah. And then, and like in my head, I was like, well, I briefly heard that it from like the book jacket description that it's going to go into future Bangkok.
I forgot that part.
Like, I was like, okay, so this is future Bangkok. It's still like close enough to the future that I can picture this. And then it just jumps ahead. It jumps ahead to like, I feel like it skips at least 50 years ahead from our timeline.
I didn't expect that much of a jump, but I'm glad we went there and then we lingered there.
Yeah.
And then he brought it back.
To Phineas Stevens.
Yeah.
Like, how's that bro doing? And then back to Neat.
And then to Clyde again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We forgot to talk about Clyde. I was wondering how Clyde would fit into all of the stories, because I'm like, okay, he's an American.
He's like the expat, right? The expat experience.
I guess. I really don't like the word expat, because really, what does that mean? It just means
white person
who has immigrated to a country. he is just an immigrant, and immigrant is kind of like a derogatory word for white people.
Well, I think music also plays a big role in this story, right? Especially jazz.
Because jazz is all about improv.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Because What I distinctly remember from the Serapong chapter was that he, like, quote-unquote borrowed his old roommate's, like, jazz collection.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's how it tied to Clyde. Mm-hmm. And also you find out that the house that he was performing in, the lady who booked him, is Sammy's mom.
Yeah.
So, like, very interesting ways that, like, Clyde was introduced and kind of woven throughout. And it's... You know, it's also, like, pretty interesting because people are able to find things from the past, like, with Clyde's music.
Yeah.
Like, you get it through records, through Serapong. You get it through Lucky, who Googles him and downloads his music. That was also, like, we don't really get to see much of Lucky.
No.
But, like, I don't know. I didn't mind.
We know she grows up and has grandchildren.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, we know that.
Well, like, you know, Lucky is the grandma who, like, sits next to Pig in that waterfall scene.
Yeah.
And I was kind of surprised that she got, you know, she became sort of a main character towards the end.
I mean, I feel like you don't name a character in the story without, like, some, like,
I
exposition
guess.
About them.
Yeah.
What did you think about the Wound and Pig chapter? A big part of that is the idea of what flail piety will look like in the future. And part of that is trying to make your mom into a robot.
Yeah. You know?
And Pig's like kind of stubbornness to like remain human.
Yeah.
Right. And what does that even mean?
Yeah. What does that mean? Yeah. And also what does it mean for future generations? Because they will be paying for the upgrades.
Yeah. I think it's something that hits us more because of our like Asian upbringing, right? In that we're expected to think about this stuff for them.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And the whole, like, I felt like the whole diaspora thing was what I related to most, right? Because I started thinking about going back to Taiwan and just the fact that, like, the moment you leave the country that you're from, quote unquote, from, right? You become something else. And that's what happened to Sammy. That's what happened to Nak.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened to people who came to Thailand, who came to Bangkok, right?
Yeah.
They became someone else. They became, like, they were no longer who they were the moment they stepped foot on or off that place.
One great imagery of that was when Sammy gets, not Sammy, Phineas gets his trunk back, mm-hmm. which was lost in his, you know, journey to Thailand.
Yeah.
And he opens the trunk and, you know, a lot of the clothes that he brought is, like, you know, kind of ruined by moths, but then there are some clothes that are like completely pristine, and he's just like, wow, I am a completely different person from when I first came here.
Yeah.
And there's really no going back to who I was, and I thought that was like a really good way of showing that change.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I really related to Sammy's story the most of like,
his story, not Sammy,
not,
the
not
guy.
Him, not him as like a terrible person and an irresponsible person, but I related to his story a lot, and same thing with Nak, who
yeah,
who is trying to like survive in Japan by
right.
like running this Thai restaurant, and
but then she still gets the expectation of like the cultural expectation put on her too, like,
yeah it's just like people like Thai students and her sister, the reason why her sister cuts ties with her is because she does business with like an exiled colonel who is part of like the dictatorship,
part of the coup that killed Serapong,
and with Nak it's kind of like, well, he pretty much saved
her business.
Yeah. And he's just there to eat lunch, but
it's also because she removed herself from politics, so mm-hmm. she didn't realize, because part of her character is because she had a sister who was more filial. Yeah. It gave her the freedom to not have to do that, right? And she carries some guilt for it, but like the truth is, like, she's like Sammy's, they kind of ran away from the responsibilities.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And just also like people from Thailand are telling her, like, you're a traitor, you're not like a real Thai person. And that's something that is kind of like a common sentiment among diaspora Asians, because it's like, it's just like you're removed from the politics of it all. And sometimes people tell you that you are not enough, and that is it's a really common story.
What did you think about the animal chapters?
I remember when I first reached like the bird chapter, like after reading the first page of that, I just like set the book down, and I'm just like, am I really reading like a chapter told through like the perspective of birds? It's like, I don't know. Like, I don't know about this sun. And
I mean, say what you will about those chapters. Like,
but I really like them in the end.
Yeah. Like, the author really, like, he wants to give you every perspective available.
I mean, with the birds chapter, that kind of stands out in my brain because you see how climate change has ruined everything.
Yeah. And also, like, animals have a different sense of time.
Mm-hmm,
right. Like, time passes a lot quicker in those,
yeah,
in those, like, within those pages, it spans generations of these migrations and birds. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Part of what you learn in this book is planet's fucked. we're screwed.
Yeah. But
it's okay as long as we can upload our brains into the matrix.
It is strangely optimistic, isn't it? Yeah. Saying that we will find a solution, even though it's not the best one.
But was it Mai herself saying that even this is just prolonging?
Yeah, it's just prolonging.
Yeah, because like who knows if there's going to be a solar flare that will disable all the systems.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like the whole concept of like this post-human like transference or whatever they called it, it's contingent on the idea that the power will never run out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the author, Pichaya, he also migrated a lot during his childhood and during his adulthood. He spends his time in Brooklyn, like split between Brooklyn and Thailand. And I know that he was like partly raised in Saudi Arabia. So he really does carry this cosmopolitan take that kind of is imbued in the story. And I'm really glad that we were able to pick up his book because I have been looking for books by more Southeast Asian.
Yeah.
Southeast Asians. But the problem is, a lot of them are written by white people. A lot of them are written by white people, or they haven't been translated into English yet. Because I do know that like Thailand does have like a very robust literary community. It's just that like they don't get translated, and thankfully, Pichaya wrote his book in English, so you do kind of get like a very interesting perspective on Bangkok, and I think because of his own upbringing, he's able to like piece these stories together really, really well.
Yeah. You know what's another big part of this whole book was food.
Oh yeah, food.
And
just like any good Asian American book, food is just on point.
But especially how it ties to memory, right? Like a lot of the conversations about how food's just not the same anymore. Or remember that time we had that really great, like, I don't know, laksa or something.
Yeah, like, it's very prevalent in, obviously, Nock's story, who runs a restaurant, because she's constantly having to, like, replace and substitute because she's not getting, like, the actual ingredients.
Yeah, and then the fact that, like, even within her story, it starts off she starts off only having a Thai clientele, but eventually it expands to having a Japanese clientele, too, because tastes change and people are looking for different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you kind of get glimpses of that in Mayan Pig, who go to like this old noodle shop and it doesn't taste the same anymore because of the flooding.
Yeah. And then in the future where Mai is plugged in to the Matrix and she can just taste whatever she wants anytime she wants.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
I want to be tasting. I don't know. You just went through. I saw on your Instagram feed that you went through a whole taste test. Of top ramen.
Yeah. My friends and I, we were trying to figure out like what to eat for dinner. And
so you decided on all the ramens?
Well, the thing is, like, we were watching Sungwon Cho, Pro ZD, and he does a lot of taste tests, and he was doing a taste test on Lunchables. And we're like, we should taste test something. I guess we should do like instant noodles. So that's how that started. This book, though, growing up, I had one of my closest friends was Thai, and her family ran like a Thai restaurant. So, like, I don't know, like when they mentioned like all of the food, I was like, oh man, that sounds really good right now. Yeah. Like authentic Thai food sounds great right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I feel like every good Asian American book has really good food descriptions. It is it is mandatory
in a way that's like I hate the word authentic.
I know
it's like it's not really what we're going for, but like you can tell it comes from a place of like
knowledge
and love and like
experience. Yeah,
you know. We did have a comment on our Goodreads forum from Julie 3x5 books. Thanks for always writing in, Julie. She was mentioning how like we were saying, it's a hard book to talk about because it's non-linear. For her, the Nia Nox stories were probably her favorite as well. And the speculative parts later on were interesting too. She also writes, one would argue that it's about, quote unquote, water, since it seems to feature prominently throughout the book. The river flooding rain, the Kano's pool, the koi pond, the waterfalls at Erewhon National Park. If a location has a bay or pond or other water feature, Subhantaj will mention it.
I will say one of my main criticisms about this book is that it was too long. I feel like for a book that interweaves a lot of characters, a lot of perspectives, and going back and forth in time periods, it should have been shorter. And I don't know what the original length was, because books get edited very, very heavily. So my guess is that it was much longer. And I don't know if that was like a detriment to it. Maybe if it was longer, we would have gotten more meatier character perspectives. But yeah, I wish that it was a bit shorter than 300 and somewhat pages.
I thought it was fine, because I was thinking about what they would take out. And the thing is, like, every single chapter, the perspectives are all so, like, I guess if there was anything, maybe the Clyde things might have been okay to do without, but I still think like his perspective as like
an American immigrant, who's living in Thailand
is important, because that is an experience of Thailand, right?
Yeah.
As is Rain,
this book is called Bangkok Wakes to Rain.
Yeah, because more often than not, they do. And eventually that rain will flood everything.
And kill everything that you hold dear.
Yeah. Maybe not kill.
not kill. Sorry. I was exaggerating. But I think it's really interesting that, like, the last book that we read was Darius the Great is Not Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's also a book that is very central on place.
Yeah.
And also, like, memories and retaining culture and stuff like that.
And diaspora, right?
And diaspora. Yeah,
the return of diaspora.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was, I think it was a really nice transition from that book to this book.
Yeah. And I think as a whole, as like a collection of interwoven short stories, I thought it was really, like, I never felt like, oh, I just have to get through this chapter to get to the next Knock chapter, right? I was like, okay, this is a Sammy chapter. Okay, this is a my chapter. This is a... And then just being surprised at who he decides to point the camera at each chapter was interesting. Like, I didn't expect June to come back. You know, I didn't expect... I didn't expect Pig to become a main character.
A main character,
right? Because when you first meet her, she's just like, oh, this girl sucks.
Oh, this rich kid.
Yeah.
This rich girl.
Say what you will about, like, the directions this story takes. He's not afraid to, like, throw wrenches in the lives of his characters.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I mean, that's what makes interesting characters.
Yeah.
You give them flaws, you give them dreams, and crush those dreams.
Yeah.
And make them suffer. And somehow redeem themselves.
Yeah. And no, part of the story is the virtues and the flaws of this place.
Climate change is really scary.
Yeah, we're screwed. Yeah. We're pretty
That was one thought that came to mind when I was reading it.
We live too close to the beach, Rira. We need to go inland.
Well, like, I was thinking about, like, because, like, my dad goes back and forth between Korea and the States and mm-hmm. travels around. And, you know, my family comes to visit pretty often. And recently, the only thing that they talk about from their trips is how bad the air is in Seoul because of, like, all of the air pollution from, like, China that is, like, drifting to Seoul, and also Seoul's own pollution, and how, like, it's affecting their lives. Like, before, it's just like, okay, wear a mask. But now, like, that is not enough. Like, you have apps now that, like, detect how bad the dust is outside. And like, my cousin was telling me that school trips are affected by this. Like, they check their app every morning.
Mm.
And they're like, okay, like, there was a school, like, there was a field trip that was, like, scheduled for today, but obviously that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, you find ways of kind of adapting to like the planet's like destruction, I guess.
My cousin lives in Shanghai and she has a air monitor in her house too.
Yeah.
Just to monitor inside and outside.
Yeah. And they also have like air purifiers in every single freaking building.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is sad because you think about like young people and that is the only city, like that is their only memory of the city, right? It's like, oh, remember the days when you didn't have to wear a mask walking around?
But if you fix the air, what will all the air purifier companies do? They'll lose all their business.
Yes, capitalism.
That's why.
Which, by the way, is pretty much the theme of Want by Cindy Pon. Because it takes place in futuristic Taipei where the air pollution is so bad that people have to wear like these like hazmat suits and only the rich people can afford it. And they're like, and like all the poor people are stuck with just like regular masks and it and it ages them and they die. And
well, if there's something Bangkok Wakes to Rain has taught us is that even with advances in technology, people will still find a way to
make money off of
people will still find a way to have a rich and poor class.
Yes.
Yeah.
I guess I will introduce the book for this month, May.
Yeah.
We're switching things up. I know that at the beginning of every episode, we say that this is a podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. But I feel like Pacific Islanders are sadly enough taken out of APAM. I feel like a lot of the focus is always on Asian Americans. And for this month, I wanted us to read a book by an author of Pacific Islander descent. And this month's book club pick is This is Paradise. And it's a collection of short stories. And it's written by Christiana Kakawila. I'm sorry if I mispronounced that, but I did try my best. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a good transition because it is also very much like vignettes of a specific place and the different people who live in Hawaii.
Yeah.
So I am excited to read this book. I picked it up from the library yesterday.
Cool.
Yeah. It should be available on Kindle. I know that publication is, I know that like there aren't a lot of copies available out in the world, unfortunately. That seems to be the case with a lot of books by Pacific Islanders. Like mass distribution seems to be very hard to come by. But I do hope that you are able to grab a copy somehow.
Yeah.
And this episode will, you know, it's a time capsule. once you find a copy and end up reading it, you can always listen to it afterward.
Yeah.
And also, this story collection came out in 2013, so it's relatively recent.
Yeah.
That was a struggle, finding a book by a Pacific Islander who, came out with a book that was within the 2010s. Mm. So I'm glad that I found it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looking forward to reading that one. And on that note, that'll do it for our discussion of Bangkok Wakes to Rain by Prachaya Supantad. Hope you enjoyed our discussion. And if you have anything to add after reading the book or after listening to our discussion, please go to our Goodreads group and let us know your thoughts. And with that, that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Wanted to quickly thank the Potluck Podcast Collective for letting us be a part of their group. The Potluck Podcast Collective is a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts, including shows like our show, The Collabcast, They Call Us Bruce, First of All, Saturday School, and more. You can find all of our great programs by going to the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks again also to Visual Communications. This podcast was recorded at the Potluck Podcast Studios located within Visual Communications in Little Tokyo. If you're in LA, check out the LA Asian Pacific Film Festival, which is being held by VC this weekend from May 2nd through May 10th. There's a lot of really great movies here, and it's always a great time. You can learn more at festival.vcmedia.org. And yeah, Rira, thanks for chatting Bangkok Wakes to Rain with me.
Yay. You have a lot of books that are on your to-be-read pile.
And, I do.
I am very proud of you.
Did you just check it out on Goodreads?
Yeah, I did.
I did. So I tried to read 3 books this month. I only finished 2.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Considering I only read 1.
So I win April. We'll see how May goes. May is jam-packed. But yeah, on that note, for everyone listening to this show, have a really great Asian Pacific American Heritage Month. Have a great Mental Health Awareness Month. Have a great month reading Asian American books. We'll see you later. Bye.
Hey, I'm Bill Yu, and you may know me from a blog called Angry Asian Man.
And I'm Jeff Yang, author, journalist, and celebrity dad.
We host a podcast called They Call Us Bruce, an unfiltered conversation about what's happening in Asian America.
Each week or so, we host a discussion about some of the most vital and interesting topics in our pop culture and our community, bringing in guests who are shaping and informing this thing called Asian America from Hollywood to D.C. and beyond.
We've got media, entertainment, food, family, politics, representation,
the good, the bad, the WTF of it all.
So check us out wherever you get your podcasts or at theycallusbruce.com.
Peace.
Peace.